This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The year is 1980. Sydney's streets are filthy, running rampant with crime and corruption. Puberty Blues is onto the cinemas, Ice House is blaring on the stereo, it's humid and dangerous, and a young man has decided to join the police force to fight crime. That man, of course, is my dad. Loose Units, the podcast, was created to tell the cases that wouldn't fit into my first book, Loose Units. But Loose Units was a series of fantastical tales that I wrote based on the real crimes my dad solved on the force back in the early 80s. So this season, Dad and I are finally going to go back to the year 1980. And each week, we'll be going chapter by chapter through Loose Units, the book. And Dad will tell us the story behind my version of events. It'll be thrilling, revelatory, and as always, very, very loose. Welcome to Loose Units Origins.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units Origins, the weekly true crime podcast where I talk to my dad about stuff he did in the 80s. It's a little more specific than that, but Dad, this week's chapter is chapter 41 from my book Loose Units, Something Bad in Store. Now, as a general rule, and I just want to throw this out there, how do you feel about the premise of the citizen's arrest? Is that a thing, first of all? If you're a citizen, can you do a citizen's arrest?
Well, it's interesting, Paul, that you said if you're a citizen, because I guess everyone's a citizen.
Right.
Aren't they?
Yeah, but by that rationale, you could be a mugger and claim that the person had jewelry they were swinging around angrily, and you're just a citizen, just doing a citizen's arrest. Like, what is a citizen's arrest? Is that a completely fabricated cinematic kind of trope, or is it real?
There was an incident in Sydney, quite a horrific incident last year, where a guy in his 20s, he had murdered a girl that he met. She was an escort, and he ran out onto the street, and he was, you know, covered in blood. He was wielding a massive knife, and a lot of people, citizens, I mean, they're not professional sort of law enforcement officers, but they took it upon themselves. Clearly, a serious offense had taken place.
Yep.
And, you know, brave, brave citizens came, and I believe there were even a few firemen involved that were sort of nearby on duty, and they managed to, at great risk to themselves, apprehend this particular person who was eventually convicted of the most serious offence, that being murder. You know, we all as citizens have, I'd go so far as to say almost a moral duty and obligation. If you see something, okay, Paul, you and Tegan are walking through the Botanic Gardens in Melbourne.
Yep.
And you see, let's just create a sort of imaginary scenario.
Someone coming at someone else with a knife, maybe?
Well, what I was going to say was that you see in front of you, maybe 50 meters away, an elderly lady. Mm-hmm. Let's say she's in her 80s.
And she's got a gun.
No. She's got a Zimmer frame.
Oh, well, you can't kill someone with that.
Well, you could if it had, like, if... who was the guy in James Bond? Was it M or Q that did all the gadgets?
Gadgets. The gadgets were done by Q, but I was thinking more, you know, in, like, the Avengers where he pulls out the, here's like a sword cane. You could have, you know, like four swords hidden in each of the, you know, a sword hidden in each of the legs of the Zimmer frame.
If the Zimmer frame had been modified, it could easily have, definitely have the ability to fire small caliber ammunition from the handles.
So you're saying that, okay, so we're walking through the... So Tegan and I are walking through the Botanic Gardens and an old woman with a modified Zimmer frame with, a gun in each end is charging at who? Who's she going to attack?
Well, she'd be shooting backwards, funnily enough.
Would she?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, the handles.
Handles, which are facing backwards.
Right, okay, so she's... Well, then isn't she on the defensive? If she's running from someone, that's surely self-defense.
She's not running from anyone. Right. But Paul...
Can we
rewind? But please keep this in the podcast because it's bizarre and fascinating. But what I was going to say is that out of the bushes comes a hooded person.
Yep.
And they mug her. Okay? So
Can't you just shoot them with a Zimmer frame gun?
No, because that was hypothetical. But back to reality. Now, you and Tegan are witnessing this event unfold.
Okay.
And the lovely, lovely, I'm assuming she's lovely, she may well not be, because some elderly people, quite frankly, are not lovely at all.
And also this woman is, you know, I mean, she's modified her Zimmer frame guns in it.
No, that's in the other reality.
Oh, it's a different universe.
Yeah, but coming back to where it's not a modified Zimmer frame.
Okay.
But you and Tegan are watching this unfold. Now, this person, elderly lady... She will not let go of her handbag for lots of reasons. Maybe she's got like some disease, like she's got a claw or crab type disease where she's actually unable to let go of her handbag.
Yeah.
But that's unlikely. What's more likely is that she just doesn't, on principle, because it's a reaction that she just doesn't want to lose her treasures, like her pensioner card. And so you and Tegan come up with a plan very, very quickly. You say to Tegan, Tegan, call 000. Okay? Notice I didn't say 000 because they're not O's, they're zeros. You with me?
Yeah.
That's important, Paul.
Okay.
A lot of people say 000.
Well, if I'm dialing 000, I'm dialing, 666.
Oh, God. So... Meanwhile, Tegan is getting onto the emergency services.
Yeah.
So when she gets through to the emergency services, they're going to say police, fire, or ambulance. She will say police. And meanwhile, you're running. That you're sprinting the 50 metres. It's like a 50-metre dash. And you've never run this fast because in your mind, you're preparing yourself to crash tackle this offender.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the guy and you just nail him. You drive him through the air. You come crashing down. You land on top of him and you pin him to the ground. Other passers-by begin to see the commotion. The lady in her Zimmer frame is clearly distressed and she's screaming and shouting. She's waving her floral hat around, trying to gain attention. And more people come to your aid. Because this is a big person. He's built like a brick shithouse. Turns out he's an escapee. And meanwhile, Tegan's got onto the emergency services. She's given the location. A very, very... She's stressed. She's kind of all over the shop. Because she's watching her lovely husband, you, on the ground. Sort of... And now my point being, Paul, that you are a citizen. And you had every single right... in this situation, to do what you did. The cutoff where things can become a little bit hazy is, imagine he was armed, you grabbed the knife off him,
yep,
and you stuck the knife in his heart.
So, okay, so at that point it becomes...
You'd be up shit creek without a paddle.
Because I'm looking at the definition of citizen's arrest... on the police website, and this is from the ACT website, but it says here, a citizen's arrest is when you, as someone who is not a duly sworn police officer, so that's me in this hypothetical, detains a person because you know the other person is committing or has just committed an offense such as a theft, assault, or criminal damage. And then it says factors to consider before making a citizen's arrest. So first of all, the fact that this page even exists indicates that it's a thing. So you should never make a citizen's arrest merely on suspicion a person is committing or has just committed an offense. You must carefully consider a number of factors, including, first of all, are you risking your personal safety? Well, if he's got a knife or a weapon, then yes. You said he's built like a brick shithouse, so I think that's where the numbers come in, you know? It's obviously much safer if a bunch of people, hold someone down. Do you have positive identification for the person?
Yes, because you've witnessed the offence take place. In fact, the offence is still taking place whilst you're running toward him. So that's irrefutable.
Well, I think in this case, I think this is done on the assumption that it's someone like in a shop or something, which is actually going to come into play regarding this chapter.
It is. It's a great segue.
Yeah, but these are the factors. These are the circumstances right now under which you should not detain, according to the ACT police. Are you risking your personal safety? Do you have positive identification for the person? Are they a regular customer or known to the store? And do you know where they live? And then it also says there needs to be reasonable grounds for making the arrest. But here is the legislation that allows you, under appropriate circumstances, to make a citizen's arrest. And I hope this doesn't result in listeners suddenly just this like rash of impromptu arrests. Here we go. So, a person who is not a police officer may, without warrant, arrest another person if he or she believes on reasonable grounds that the other person is committing or has just committed an offence. A person who arrests another person shall, as soon as practicable after the arrest, arrange for the other person and any property found on the other person to be delivered into the custody of a police officer. So that sounds like kind of like a deputized sheriff, but it's the reasonable grounds that gets me. And here is how it defines reasonable grounds. Reasonable grounds means you have direct evidence that constitutes belief that the person has committed an offence. An obvious example of reasonable grounds would be if you were to actually see a customer take an item from a store shelf, put it into their pocket, and then walk out of the store with that item, thus indicating a clear intention not to pay for it. Now, this seems to say that you could do a citizen's arrest, which I'm assuming isn't a crash tackle. I assume it's just like making sure they don't leave. In the case of like a shoplifter or whatever. But let's say it is the knife or the Zimmer frame with bullets in it or whatever, right? Like the Zimmer frame gun. Now, in the case of this chapter, Dad, in the case of chapter 41, which is called Something Bad in Store, this takes place at a department store in Coffs Harbour, correct?
No, on the northern beaches of Sydney.
Right.
David Jones.
Yes.
DJs. Which is...
Well, in the book, it's at Coffs Harbour because you guys were on holiday at that point. But you're saying it actually took place...
Yeah, it actually took place on the northern beaches. But yes, I'd been on holiday for some time.
Yeah.
But there's a prequel to the story, which I'd like to sort of touch on, Paul.
Please do.
Okay. I was working with a female police officer. We were at Mossman. We were on general duties. It was afternoon shift. It was dark.
Do you recall her name?
Yes. Her name, shall I use her real name?
No,
I will use her real name. I'll just use her Christian name. Her name was, and if she's still alive, her name probably still is, because not many people change their first name by deed poll, do they?
Not many.
And her name is Sharon, and she ended up marrying a police officer, and she was one of those female police officers that I thoroughly enjoyed working with, because she was just wonderful. She was adept, confident, professional, and she'd never let you down. She was bloody awesome.
Okay.
Now, we had a particular, I say we, in North Sydney, which was 6th Division, there was a particular female store detective, and she worked for Woolworths. That was her brief. Woolworths employed her, so she probably worked in many, many Woolworths stores, but she had a fierce reputation, and she was so zealous, in fact, overzealous, that I found it quite depressing. And it brings in a very interesting moral point at this juncture, Paul, that I would like to cover, and that is that if you saw someone stealing a packet of chewing gum, for example, what would you do?
I would probably... Oh, God, that's a good question, because it seems like chewing gum's not that it doesn't require that much of a response, right? You just sort of like block the door and, I mean...
You're so sweet. That's so sweet of you, Paul. Look, it's... You know what? I couldn't give a rat's ass.
Well, it's just gum. Like, who gives a shit?
No, right? But also, I think you've got to get things into perspective.
Mm.
Because imagine if the situation escalates. Imagine if the person that you see stealing a packet of chewing gum,
mm-hmm.
imagine if that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
You don't know anything about the person. Are you really going to put your life in danger, potentially? I would, even today, and I'm a pretty big guy and, you know, I'm pretty cluey, but if I saw someone sort of shove a packet of crisps under their shirt, I'd kind of think, yeah, that's pretty uncool. Would I alert a member of staff? I may say to someone if they were nearby, hey, that guy, that lady's just shoved some chips under their T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to lose sleep over it. And I know there are professional shoplifters out there that go to extraordinary lengths and steal the most unbelievable things. You can't imagine some of the things these people can steal, but they're right. professionals. But, you know, is it really worth putting your life... I would certainly perhaps pass it on to a member of staff and then abrogate all my responsibility. And then if they then went to sort of stop the person... It's a very technical legal thing about theft. In my opinion, they should at least be given the advantage of being able to leave the store. Because has a theft occurred whilst in the store? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but then do you let them go outside and sort of just, oh God, it's fraught with, I mean, what happens if you see a young mother with some little babies, like little kids, they're all disheveled, they look as though they haven't had a bath in a week, and she looks around, she looks so, so sad and kind of, look, she's homeless, say, and she puts a loaf of bread under her dress, for example.
Well, that's when discretion comes into it, I guess.
Well,
right?
Yes, but in the eyes of the law, they don't really take that into consideration. But as a human, if I saw that, what would I do?
But you've talked so often about exercising discretion, and that's what good police do, is that they exercise discretion and they, you know, they slightly tailor the kind of delivery of certain things depending on the context, right? Mm, but what I'm curious about is what this apparently draconian, you know, woman did. Who, what was her actual job position?
She was a undercover store detective. I mean, I find that word detective kind of a little bit, well...
Did she flash a badge or...
Didn't have a badge, but, you know, she was just a hard nut. And you knew that if ever you were called to Woolworths in 6th Division,
yeah,
you knew that it was her and you knew that it was going to be a big production. One thing that she used to do regularly, which infuriated me, she would insist that we arrested the person. And I kind of liked doing that because I would then turn around and go, no, we're not arresting this person. Occasionally you would.
But you give them a warning? I mean, I guess...
But you could summons them. You could get all their details and get them to appear or in court. You don't always have to sort of, you know, handcuff someone. Because remember, when you arrest someone, you're taking away their liberty.
Yeah.
It's such a big thing to do. And, you know, you handcuff them if necessary. Everyone in the store gets to see them. What happens if they're a local?
Yeah.
Like, what happens if it's...
You've completely screwed their rep.
You know, and it's happened to Hollywood movie stars, hasn't it?
I mean, look at Winona Ryder, yeah? So you've got countless men in Hollywood for many years doing horrendous shit, like just off the rails, and their careers are fine. And Winona Ryder stole, I think, a hat and was photographed shoplifting, and then she did some community service, and then her career disappeared for like a decade as a result. It doesn't seem entirely fair, but anyway.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. So, look, there are so many things to consider, but one night, one I guess it was because it was a Thursday night because it was open till 9. We get a call to attend Woolworths Neutral Bay. We meet the store detective. She's in her usual, very officious, you know, sort of hard-edged kind of telling us what to do. Now, that's the worst thing you can do. You know, when I was in the police force, if I had sort of a store detective insisting that we take a particular course of action, immediately I would probably do the opposite. And I sussed this person out. Turned out to be one of the major fuck-ups of my police career. This guy who was massive, very erudite. You know, he was very sort of subdued, polite. He'd stolen one packet of chewing gum. And she insisted that we basically, you know, take him out to Long Bay and throw away the keys.
It was juicy fruit, wasn't it?
Yeah, juicy fruit. I mean, it's, honestly, it's so inane. And so I was thinking to myself, what are we doing? Like, seriously? Anyway, what happened was we got the guy's details and we took him back to the police station and we fingerprinted him and we, for some reason or other, we charged him. But we obviously, because it was such a minor offence, we let him go. And he was bailed to appear at North Sydney Court. I'm almost embarrassed telling this story at this point. But, you know, that was the way it was back then. Sometimes we just had to, you know, go with the flow and follow procedure. And it's such a waste of police resources on such a tiny, tiny matter. But I guess one can argue there's a principle. So what happened was he was bailed. I got a few details in my notebook. There was just something about this guy that just slightly kind of made me feel that something wasn't quite right. It was just a feeling, but you can't really go on a feeling. So what happened was, a few days later, once his fingerprints had been processed at the Central Fingerprint Bureau, all his real details came back. And it turns out that he was a heavy crim. And he was also, he'd done some serious time for murder.
Do you have any serious recollection? I was going to say,
He'd done 8 years in a maximum security prison. And get ready for this, Paul. He was an escapee, and we'd completely. So what he'd done, he's on the run, and he was also a professional shoplifter,
right?
But we didn't know any of this because he'd given us a dodgy name, which people often did, and then you had to sort of process. But you can't just hold people unless if he'd committed a serious offence. We would have fingerprinted him that night, then someone could have gone over to the bureau that night with the prints and waited whilst they did a check.
But because it was just gum.
Because it was gum, we just
didn't
thought...
think that, yeah.
No. And also, but, you know, this overly officious Woolworths store detective, on this particular occasion, she was pretty spot on in terms of, you know, her reaction and... And then what happened was, once we realised that he, in fact, you know, had been in our grasp, and then he'd gone, that you know, that sort of ate away at me for some time. Meanwhile, you were a little baby. You were probably maybe 2 years old. You were in a pram, and Christine was 8.5 months pregnant.
Jesus. All right, so right up the pointy end.
Okay. Right, ready to drop a bundle.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh.
And she was pregnant.
Yeah.
With Anne, your sister.
Mm-hmm.
It was holidays. I'd been on leave for at least a month.
Yep.
We went down to David Jones at Warringah Mall, which is in Brookvale on the northern beaches of Sydney. And I had not shaven at all for some weeks, and I was dressed extremely casually. You were in this little pram. I remember the pram very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just sort of doing something that I don't know whether people can actually today remember what I'm about to say, but we were actually browsing in a shopping center, something that I haven't done for a long time. And David Jones just had this really nice vibe. It was quite a nice store, not necessarily the sort of place we could at that point in time afford to shop in, but it was nice to just kind of, it was midsummer, so it was air conditioned, and, you know, it was in the morning. It would have been definitely midweek, and like in a movie, Paul, where you've got, imagine the letter X, which indicates two escalators next to each other, one going up, one going down.
Mm-hmm.
Christine and you were down the bottom, so we were probably on the second floor. It's a three-story building,
mm-hmm.
still there. And as I'm going down the escalator, like in a movie, I'm just sort of looking around. And occasionally, it's because it's a bit weird at that juncture, at the sort of crux of the letter X, is where you can eyeball people that are next to you.
Yeah.
And I'm looking and I see this guy, this massive, massive guy with a full face beard. And he's a big guy. I'm trying to give the listeners an idea. So let's say that I weigh 90 kilos and I'm over 6 foot. He was at least as tall as me, but he would have weighed about 130 kilos. And he was a hard, kind of fit, massive guy. He looked like a bikie. And as I'm looking at him, and he looks at me, and for that moment in time, there was a mutual realization that we'd both seen each other before. And I thought, I've seen you before. And then I realized that he was, in fact, an escapee. He was still an escapee.
Mm-hmm.
He was an escapee with warnings next to his name. Under no circumstances is this person to be approached. If you're a police officer on duty and you see him, you must call for extensive backup. In other words, he's a dangerous motherfucker. I'm dressed like a bag of shit. unshaven. It would have been maybe 11 in the morning, midsummer, northern beaches. Everyone's pretty chilled. I'm wearing thongs, shorts, t-shirt. Christine is at the bottom with you. So I'm heading down to her and I'm loath to look back because I'm thinking, let's just pretend that he didn't cotton on to who I am.
Yeah.
The second I get down to you and Christine, I have a sense of foreboding. I knew in my heart what I had to do. I knew it was, I'm not going to say it was foolhardy, but I felt as though I'd let this guy slip once before.
Yeah.
And I really, my entire professional police persona just like flicking a light switch. I just went into police mode, even though I was unarmed. And I said something profound to Christine that was, as it turns out, something that probably, I wouldn't go so far as to say saved my life, but I don't know. But I did something so, I think it was the right thing to do at the time, and it was an extreme thing. I said to Christine, you must get the police, call the police, get a member of staff to call the police, tell them where we are, and tell them that it's a Signal 1. Now, you know the importance of that, Paul.
So a Signal 1 means that an officer is in danger or under attack, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
What you were doing was basically saying, in about 20 seconds, I am going to be in a fight with this guy, right? Mm.
Yep.
So the assumption was that, look, this is probably not going to go smoothly, but you were performing. Okay, here's an interesting point. As you were off duty, is this a citizen's arrest?
No. The second
really?
You announce your office,
right.
The second a police officer announces he or she is a police officer, you are on duty.
Yep, okay.
In fact, you could argue that a police officer is never, ever off duty. They can switch on and off as they wish. But they have to be prudent.
Yep.
You're not going to go up to some, you know, Hell's Angel on a fucking Harley Davidson and say, oh, you're illegally parked, because he'll probably kill you.
Yeah.
That's foolhardy, even though I did work with police that were that stupid.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Okay.
So, anyway, and the look on her face, and she's pregnant. She's 2 weeks off giving birth to your sister.
Yeah.
I look down at you, I look at Christine, I'm aware of what is going to happen. The last thing on earth I wanted was to put you and Christine in any danger. And then I realised what I had to do. Christine's gone off and she was going to take control of getting this urgent information to all the local police, which would have been DY and Manly. But being a Signal 1... It's weird to say a Signal 1 because it hadn't happened yet. It could well be the very first person. I could possibly be the first person ever to call a Signal 1 before it actually became one.
I think what it probably meant was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but did this mean that you then had to follow through with some sort of arrest? It's like by doing that, you...
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I'd set the wheels in motion. I'd already made a very conscious decision. I was quite aware that physically it was going to be tough.
Yeah.
It was like stepping into a boxing ring with a much larger, and a person, might I add, that had nothing to lose. Now, I didn't know where that person had gone to. I just knew that they'd gone to the top floor, but they could well have just run around and gone back down. There are so many ways to get out. They could have gone to an elevator.
Mm.
They could have hidden. So I've dashed up, but I tried to be a little bit cool. I didn't sort of go running up the escalator. But I just kind of did it fairly deliberately. When I got to the top floor, which is primarily white goods, or was white goods, but it was a massive furniture section with, you know, displays, and it was high end. Mm. In fact, they even had an antique section within David Jones at Ringamall, where they had the most expensive antiques money could buy in Australia. Was really high end. And I saw him and I approached him. By that stage, I knew his real name. It was sort of emblazoned in my mind. And I called out his first name, his Christian name.
Yeah.
And he turned and I said, and I just uttered his full name. I said, "You're under arrest." And the only thing that I could do, and then I began to realize as I got closer to him how fucking scary he was. And I basically just lunged toward him and we kind of sort of ended up with this sort of like a double bear hug. He was sort of trying to get away and the only thing I could do, like I couldn't basically stand away from him and sort of like in a ring and you'd come in and, you know, sort of punch or whatever. It was not like a fight because I realized at that point that if I let go, he would decamp. He'd just bolt. So I just realized the only thing I could do was hold on for grim death. So I was basically hanging on to this thrashing machine and we were creating such a terrible commotion in David Jones that as we were spinning around, I began to get this sense that there were people, and obviously there were people, just watching this whole situation unfold. And then at a certain point, we ended up literally smashing furniture. We were ending up on... It was like in a movie where we were just crashing through whole sort of room displays with lights and tables, you know, sideboards, everything that you've got inside a department store is just being flown. There were lamps, there were... Oh, God, it was such a shit fight. And then I began to be aware that he was forcing me over towards the bedding section.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up on this huge bed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Romantic.
Very romantic. And he was literally on top of me.
Yeah.
And he was crushing me. And the only thing I could do was hold on to him. And I was holding on for grim death. And then I became aware that the only thing I could do was just wait. And I could hear police sirens in the background,
right,
which was incredibly comforting. And then Christine had made her way up with you into this area. And it was very easy for her to find out where I was because of the incredible just furniture smashing, light bulbs, sort of just everything just being smashed. There was basically a trail of destruction and there were probably maybe 30 or 40 people all standing around watching these two men just sort of having this huge brawl in the furniture section of David Jones. And then poor Christine, she left you in the pram and you would have been watching this whole thing unfold. So I can't imagine how you as a two-year-old would have, you know, sort of been able to comprehend your father having the shit kicked out of him, and then your pregnant mother running toward this psychopath. And Christine was so distressed, and she's a serving police officer. She was so distressed, and I'm sure that she was screaming and shouting and begging all these people to help. And she would have this would have been this sort of mixed emotion of just fear. I mean, it was the whole thing was just terrible. Yeah. And I remember looking to my right and I could see Christine coming over and this fuckwit, scumbag, degenerate animal, he turned around and he kicked Christine in the stomach. He kicked Christine in her 8.5 month pregnant stomach and he knocked her to the ground. So this guy was... He's a bad, bad guy. And the store detective, who was a huge guy, he had seen all this and he's running towards this commotion. He sees Christine get knocked to the ground. The terror and fear and just dismay by onlookers to see that happen would have been traumatic. But the reason that no one kind of intervened with the two men on the bed was that we both looked like bags of shit. They could not tell who was and who was not a police officer.
Because of your kind of, you were in holiday mode, right?
Holiday mode, unshaven. Yep. You know, it just looked like two men having a brawl, which is unusual.
Yeah.
But then people would have also witnessed what happened to Christine. They would have witnessed you probably, I just can't imagine what you were thinking. But the store detective, who was a gargantuan human, he was massive, he kind of came over. Now, he didn't know who was who. So what he did is that he jumped on the bed with the two of us. So then we had three men on a bed.
Hello.
And what he was doing, he was basically sort of crushing the offender who was crushing me. So it was like a sandwiched threesome of three big men, and I was on the bottom. So I had ostensibly about 250 to 300 kilos literally crushing the life out of me. If it had have been the ground with no give, I could have broken ribs and who knows. But because of that, there's give in the bed. And eventually, the police rocked up. Look, if I hadn't have got Christine to call a Signal 1, I hate to think how this would have ended. And I'm not joking. There were so many police. And you think about the logistics of rocking up to a major shopping centre, making your way into the building, making your way up to the third floor.
Yeah.
And there were police. They would have outnumbered the public. It was really comforting. And they have literally sussed out what was happening in a microsecond.
Mm.
And they arrested the offender. And this is a little bit exciting, Paul. I'm not sure whether this is mentioned, but they had to get an ambulance for Christine. And as an aside, it made the front page of the Manly Daily.
Did it?
The local paper.
Oh, wow.
And
if anyone who works at the Manly Daily could find this, please, for the love of God, I want to see this headline.
Yeah. The headline read,
yep,
pregnant woman's attacker jailed. That was the headline. And then it went into the preamble. But when they got this scumbag into an office, there were police literally. There were so many police in this room that, you know, it was like, and I'll never forget this scumbag. He reached into his pocket. He wasn't handcuffed at that stage. And he grabbed something out of his pocket and he shoved it into his mouth and he began chewing rapidly.
No, he didn't.
He began chewing rapidly. And a petite, and I mean that in, I don't mean that in any disparaging or, don't misconstrue the word petite, but this petite policewoman, in a microsecond, shoved her entire hand down this arsehole's throat. It was incredible. It had to be seen to be believed. And she pulls out of his throat this, like a mangled piece of A4 paper.
Mm-hmm.
And she unravels this ball of half-masticated, saliva-coated paper.
Yeah.
And she spreads it out over the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And there, in front of everyone's eyes, is a list of items that he was out to steal. He was a professional shoplifter as well as a murderer, and he did lots of other terrible things as well. Scary stuff.
So that's the kind of stuff that you would then just basically just take him to court, right?
He was. And then later that day, I went to DY Police Station, which is where he had been charged, and he was being interrogated by the detectives. And this is going to sound a little bit weird, listeners, but I actually filled out a form for overtime. Because I was entitled to 4 hours minimum for recall to duty.
Right, but what I will say, Dad, is that, I mean, look, I'm really happy you got paid for overtime. What I'm curious about is, was Mum okay?
Mum was. I'd just gone back after this traumatic incident at David Jones, and the day that Christine was going to give birth, after she'd been, you know, she had to have a lot of medical tests to make sure she was okay, that the baby was okay. But, you know, it all kind of ties in all these stories, the police stories, you know, the whole thing. And the thing, Paul, is that eventually this guy was charged with some really, really serious offences.
But there weren't any, like, health ramifications for Mum?
No. Although, not really. But I guess psychologically there'd always be, you know. But the person we were actually most concerned about, Paul, was you as a baby to witness what that terrible trauma.
I have no memory of it, but maybe a hypnotherapist could kind of dredge that up. But what I'm really, really curious about is, what did you think of my Hollywood-esque spin on how the whole thing went down in the book?
I thought it was, as per usual, Paul, bloody brilliant. What you do, you get the sort of the kernel of, you know, the idea, and then you just because let's remember how all this came about, in that you would interview me, I'd talk to you, and then you'd kind of, you know, craft your magic around the events. And I really enjoy reading your version, which is, you know, basically spot on, but you've added the sort of, you know, the excitement and the thrill. Well, I loved your location. Coffs Harbour is just on any day. So beautiful compared to, I don't want to sort of get any flack here from where that shopping centre is on the northern beaches, but it's a bit of a, you know, bit of a sad area.
Because in the book, I tried to make you sound like you were, you know, like fighting pretty well.
Yeah. And of course. I know, mate, and I really appreciate that. And, well, you know, look, I would have if I could have, but I just knew that if I had broken away to sort of prepare some amazing karate stance. No, Paul, you scoff. But I did jiu-jitsu for many, many years. And
what,
believe
what,
you
sorry,
me, what
this
I would...
is new. Hang on. Let's fact check this. Is that true?
Of course, Paul, I did jiu-jitsu with Mr. I can't remember his name. But anyway, yeah, I loved it.
No, hang on. You're talking about Mr. Sue. That was my Taekwondo instructor.
No, that's why I didn't. But my guy was a Korean black belt, amazing guy. And yeah, I loved it. I did it for super many, many years. I did like five years. Maybe five?
5 years when?
Oh, from when I was 12 to, well, maybe 11 to...
Hang on. Weren't you in America? Weren't you like a decorated trumpeter playing on a cruise ship in England at that point?
Paul?
Did you take sabbatical from your jiu-jitsu to do and play trumpet and then continue your classes when you got back? Or?
Paul, when I lived in Beacon Hill...
Yeah.
The
home of jiu-jitsu, obviously.
We had a youth club up the road that's still there.
Yeah.
That's where I also used to go to dances on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Jeez, I love those dances. During the week, it was, you know, you could do gymnastics, and one of the things that you could do was jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm. And how often did you go?
Minimum once a week.
Oh, you went once a week every week for 5 years?
Oh, at least.
5 years at least?
Paul, I made my way right up the ranks. Paul, you sound as though you're about to shit your pants, Paul.
This isn't... You went to a handful of lessons and then, like, okay, so you sent me to two... You sent me to two golf lessons. At no point would I go, years,
Paul.
I was a professional golfer. Like, what are you
Paul,
talking?
What
jiu-jitsu.
Paul. Shit. Paul. Listen.
I climbed the ranks, Paul.
Paul, where do you get these... Look, honestly...
God. You can't just say at the end of a thing where you've revealed that you don't know how to fight, going, well,
Paul,
I was a trained jiu-jitsu practitioner, and if I'd used jiu-jitsu, I would have killed him, and I would have been liable in a court of law. Fact.
Paul.
Yep.
I did jiu-jitsu for many, many years, okay?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I used to do push-ups on my knuckles.
Sure.
I used to do... Hang on, don't you believe me?
No.
Oh, God, you're joking. But call your grandmother, for fuck's sake, and fact check it.
I'm going to call grandma and ask if you did jiu-jitsu, and we're going to get... I'm going to... Because the thing is, I'm sure you did some jiu-jitsu,
You don't do some jiu-jitsu. I was a devotee, okay?
Yep.
And I aspired to get my black belt.
So if I were to take you to, you know, like any kind of open area and ask you to reenact some of your moves, would you have any
Paul, would you like me to give you the names of some of the throws I used to do?
Yep.
Ippon Seanagi.
Dad, you know that that's a judo move.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't do judo.
Didn't you?
No. It's jiu-jitsu.
I think some random Korean dude claimed he was an instructor and taught you just some arbitrary shit.
The facts are...
I think you did judo. You may have done judo.
No, it was jiu-jitsu.
Well, we're going to have to meet in the field of battle and see if you still remember any of those moves. But look, listeners, this has been a really odd episode. I've had so much fun doing this episode with you, Dad. It's a wild story. And obviously, in the book, it's quite different, but it has to be because it's the, you know, it's the Hollywood version of things. I'm so glad we got to find out the context, though, with the gum. That is really interesting. The story of this guy that you performed this arrest on actually continues, and it will continue over the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that. And this week for Loose Ends, we've got a real treat for you. So make sure you keep your eyes open for that. In the meantime, something else is happening this week. You will have all heard Dad's episode on Dish. A couple of weeks back, you will have heard Dad talking about his desert island dish and his signature dishes and all kinds of stuff with Tegan and I on our new show, Dish. Now, you guys got that episode early. That's the deal. You got it early because you're Loose Units fans. We gave that to you as a treat. That episode drops this week on the actual Dish feed. So now everyone else is going to hear what you've already heard. But what we would love is for you to go across to Dish on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review, because I just want Loose Units listeners to bring the love before everyone else gets to hear the episode. So make sure you get onto that for us. We'd really appreciate that. We're really working hard on Dish. And Dad's episode was just so great. It was so great. But we hope you're having a good week, and we're really looking forward to you listening to Loose Units this week and Loose Ends. So we will we'll see you later this week for more Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.